Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of NHL Fantasy on Ice. We've got more hockey, we've got a game six, and we got Waiver Wire James in the building. How are we doing this morning?
I'm doing great, Rob. How are you, buddy?
Well, Rob's doing great. You don't say, how am I? How you doing, Bob? You know, how's everything going, Bob?
Bob, I was going to get to you as well, but I was, you know, I was talking to Rob first, and then I was going to wait for you to chime in, and then I was going to say hi to you.
Okay, well, it's good to see your face there, James, and thanks for hopping on as we talk pucks, and we have a game six on a Monday, Robbie. I don't know if we thought that was going to happen. I mean, you did. You actually had this correct. You said Lightning win game four, Dallas wins game five. You were right on with that.
Now, I have to admit, though, double overtime, I mean, that's a coin flip. So this could easily be Bolts hoisted the trophy already. But we've got a game six, lucky enough for us. I'm excited for this one, James. I think the interesting factor that has to be talked about this game specifically is each game in the series prior, it was like, will Stamkos play? Do the Dallas Stars have to prepare for that? Is he going to suit up? He's inching closer. Well, he's been ruled out now for the whole series. So that story has kind of been laid to rest. Do you think that that changes your outlook at all, James, on this?
No, I don't, because I think when you look at it, he hadn't played at all in any game in the playoffs leading up to this point. He hadn't played in the first two games of the series. So I think Dallas had to prepare as if Stamkos wasn't going to play at all. And then I think it was very surprising to everybody when he ended up suiting up in that game. But again, he only played, what, 3.5-4 minutes in that game before he didn't see another shift once the second period started, which from what the Lightning said was never the plan. I don't think they would, you know, hamstring themselves and suit a guy up to only have him play 3.5 minutes in a Stanley Cup game like that just for the posterity of doing it. I think Dallas was just preparing the entire time that if Stamkos plays, how effective is he really going to be considering he hasn't played a game in 7 months? But no, I don't think this changes anything for Dallas. I think now going forward, they're going to implement the same game plan they had Stamkos been in the lineup. I don't think Tampa Bay would have gone with the same game plan because I don't see Tampa Bay breaking up that top line right now with Palat on the wing for Kucherov and Point, because that line is just unbelievably dynamic at the moment. So it would have been interesting to see where Stamkos slotted in. But no, I don't think that news really changes anything for Dallas, because I think they were preparing the entire time for him to not even play at all.
All Dallas has to do is get pucks to the net, let Pavelski and Corey Perry stuff it in. It worked. It worked the last two games. I mean, break it down. Don't take penalties. And as far as Stamkos goes, I mean, as James said, I mean, he wasn't a factor. You know, he's out. You know what? Good for him that he played a role in the series. But I'm interested to see what the injury is and how serious it is. But, yeah, I mean, for Dallas, baby, we got a game six. Tampa, no panic for Tampa, right, Robbie? Tampa's cool as a cucumber, right?
Yeah, no panic there, Bob. I think, especially in a back-to-back situation, I can't imagine how hard it is to come out both victories, especially if both go to overtime like they did. So I think they get a pass on this one. It has to be said, though, that they have had trouble closing out, not just in the Stanley Cup final before, but in to playoffs overall. So there, I think there is with Tampa that little bit of a worry situation where it's like, uh-oh, is this team capable of closing the door? I think they will. I do think it'll happen in game seven, though. I just have a feeling, Bob, Tyler Seguin, five assists in the past two games. It's like they don't need this guy to score goals anymore. The narrative has changed with Seguin. If he keeps dishing apples multiple per game, no one's going to care if he's lighting a lamp anymore.
Fair enough. So a game seven prediction early and often here, not even like 7 minutes into the program. James, I thought Tampa played really, really – I don't think they have to change much at all to their game. I mean, I thought they played a really excellent game in game five, and they said as much after the game in their post-game pressers. I mean, they played a great game. Dallas gets the goal. Corey Perry, who in the Calgary series, I said this guy was toast. He was done. Next thing you know, next game he scores a goal. Then he gets some more goals. I mean, since I lit the fire under his rear end, he's been going. And Pavelski, how underrated is Joe Pavelski at this point? He's got the most goals in the playoffs by a U.S.-born player. You don't never talk about him. He's always in the mix. He's tying up games. But for a game seven, wow. I don't know if I'm ready to say that just yet, James.
I think that if Tampa Bay comes out and plays exactly the way that they did on Saturday night, this thing is done tonight. I had Tampa Bay winning this series in six. I'm holding to that. I think that they're going to come out and implement the same game plan. They played a near flawless game the other night. And when you look at as soon as overtime started, Dallas got very lucky to win that game because they got outplayed in the first overtime and the first, you know, five whatever minutes of the second overtime before Dallas scored. Tampa Bay was skating circles around Dallas. Dallas was lucky to be in it. Obviously, I know, Bobby, you got a little excited on that Gurianov breakaway.
I did. I did.
But, you know, I would not change a thing if I'm Tampa Bay. I would go out there. I would run the same game plan. And I think if you do that, you know, you're going to see them close it out tonight. I think that they played better. They were the better team the other night. You know, Dallas earned it, but I think they also got a little bit lucky that Anton Khudobin just stood on his head in overtime because, you know, Tampa was peppering him for a while there, and that game easily could have ended a lot sooner.
I think they had like two shots in the first overtime. They looked absolutely gassed on the rope. So to come out with the win is like a huge sigh of relief, but then they're right back at it. And that's the key. Rob, can they replicate that performance? Vasilevsky was pretty good, right? Can they replicate that performance again here, game six? This happened with the Islanders. There was a little doubt. Hey, can they close out the Islanders? They didn't close them out in five. They ended up closing them out in six, excuse me. I think they can replicate it. I think they can play that game. And if they get the pucks and the bounces, and, you know, they're going to wrap it up. If not, it'll be a game seven.
The wildest thing is that they've played almost the same game every single game throughout the postseason. There really hasn't been much inconsistency from that team. So I do think they'll replicate it tonight, but I wouldn't write off Dallas just yet. I think what we saw with Corey Perry, with Joe Pavelski, with Seguin, with guys like Oleksiak, they're all kind of playing to a new level now late in the series. And I just think this has been such a weird year. I think we're in for more of a weird turn than we expected. And Dallas, get this, somehow, some way, tell me the math on this waiver wire, James. They are scoring 2.96 goals per game. They're allowing 3.08 goals per game. It really doesn't check out. The checks and balances don't check out there. You don't have to be an accountant to figure that one out. So I think this is just a wacky year in general, obviously, for what's happening off the ice too. But I think Dallas, they do stand a chance in this one. Again, I'm a little bit jaded on Tampa Bay closing things out. I think they ultimately will. But I would just, before we get too high on the Bolts in game six, it's so funny to see them play such a good game. It's a little frustrating, honestly, and then not get the result they kind of deserve.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. And that's why I think it comes down to the guys that they have, the leaders of that team, and you know, the coaching staff there to just drive home the point to those guys that, hey, you know, you guys were the better team there the other night. A break or two here and there cost you from what was winning. Don't get down on yourselves because you were the better team. You executed the way we wanted you to execute. If you go out and do that, you're going to make them play, you know, a perfect game in order to beat you, which is, you know, it was just a perfect storm the other night that Dallas got the late goal to tie it and then got the goal the way that they did in overtime, in the second overtime there to win it. But again, if I'm the coaching staff and I'm the leaders of that team, you know, the Victor Hedmans, the Ryan McDonoughs, you know, Point, Kucherov, those guys, you're sitting there saying to everybody else, like, we're fine, guys. We're playing our game. And if we play that again tonight, we're going to be fine because they have to play just up to the level that we did in order to beat us.
Guys, this is nothing new, but this Palat Point Kucherov line is outrageous. They generate so many chances, and at some point, the puck's going to find the back of the net. I mean, the Dallas Stars are basically like, we can't stop them. We have no chance of stopping this line. And if you're a Dallas Stars fan, anytime they jump over the boards, you're like, oh my God, they're going to score a goal. They're that good. They generate that many chances. And that's not even without Stamkos. It's crazy. I mean, Palat has been a really good player for them. Palat is an excellent player. Flies under the radar, but he's a really good player.
Well, he's a great player, and he's always been a fantasy target of ours in the regular season, but he has trouble staying healthy. It's clear when he's healthy that he's a factor, and it's clear that when he's on that top line, he's the perfect complement to guys like Braden Point and guys like Nick Kucherov. So hopefully that's a storyline, too, that we're talking about and carrying over into next season. But last thing I'll say about game six specifically and the Dallas Stars is that Corey Perry, after the game, after the double overtime winner, he said, guys, we have 6 periods of hockey left this season. I mean, I think that's exactly their mindset in a nutshell, where they're going to try one period at a time, chip away. Doesn't matter, you know, what it looks like, if it's high class hockey or not, they're going to chip away. And the Tampa Bay Lightning, I think that we've seen this, you said it earlier, Bob, I believe, against the New York Islanders, they kind of have trouble going to those dirty areas, getting those dirty goals. They like to play a little bit more high end, a little bit more flashy. So I do think this benefits Dallas late in the series, only for one game though. Like I said, I think Tampa's winning this thing. I'm just saying, if the odds, hey, if Dallas is underdog tonight, Bob, you might as well throw another $10 on that. I mean, why wouldn't you?
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I would play Dallas small. I mean, Tampa has more paths to win and are the likely winner in all of these games. But as we've seen, Dallas, you know, a greasy goal there, a greasy goal there. They get late into these games. They throw one knockout punch. They win the game. James, when I saw Dallas, how tired they were, I thought of you. I thought of you working hard and how tired you are every day, that you work so hard, James.
So hard.
You know, doing well.
So hard.
You know, you mix it in, you know, the golf pro, sizing people up, and then also doing your side work in the law firm. Can you relate? Can you talk to me about, you know, Dallas's will in that game and how tired they looked, and just to be that tired and then to get the win? Oh my God, just jump in bed and don't wake up until this morning, right? And be ready to go for game 6.
You know, if I'm Rick Bonus, I probably gave those guys a day off yesterday. That's for sure. I mean, they looked gassed at the end there. And I think if they didn't score on that power play in double overtime, you definitely would have seen a big rush from Tampa Bay. And I don't think that game lasted very much longer. But yeah, I mean, you know, Dallas, that's where it comes down. Tampa Bay needs to get Dallas. And you know, it's kind of what we talked about in the Dallas Vegas series, and even in the Dallas Colorado series. You know, Dallas gets these guys to play down to their pace. Dallas dictates the pace, and when you can get when you can dictate the pace for Dallas, you know, and that's what Tampa needs to do tonight. They need to dictate the pace. They need to play that up tempo style that they like to play. When they can dictate the pace like that, you're going to tire Dallas out very quickly. And that's how you beat them. And I think that you're going to see Tampa Bay really come out tonight in the first 10, 15 minutes and just try and skate up and down and turn this into a track race.
Hey, that game 4 was a great game 4. Let's not forget about the game 4 on Friday night. That was an excellent game where Dallas has a 2-0 lead and continues to give up the lead, but keeps coming back. And I did not love the penalty in overtime. I don't know where your thoughts were on that one with Jamie Benn. I did not love calling the penalty in that spot. And if I'm Jamie Benn, I'm a little ticked off.
I mean, you look, I don't want to get too far into game 4 because it's too far in the past now in the modern world, right, with our attention spans. But I agree wholeheartedly. I actually went on the radio the next day in Montreal at 8:05 a.m. and said the same thing, Bob. Put the whistle away, you know, chintzy calls. Do you have to take, well, and for Ben's perspective though, do you have to be doing that? Like, it's like, I kind of see both ways. I think yeah. Give the ref some credit. I mean, look, it's a split second game. Yeah. And I'll say this too, Bob, the reason I didn't have a major problem with it at the end of the day, Dallas had every opportunity to keep.
And they called the penalty before that.
Right. Exactly. So don't, as much as it was a chintzy call, absolutely, there should be no penalties in overtime unless it's totally egregious. That's always been my stance, but I can't defend Dallas on that one. They had every opportunity to close that thing out. So why don't we go around the horn predictions for this evening? I'll tee up waiver wire James first.
I'm going Tampa Bay. I think they close it out tonight.
Okay. That was pretty quick and easy. All right. So listen, like I said, put a shekel on Dallas as a dog. Hopefully you get to game 7. I also, for whatever reason, feel like it's a nip tuck, tight game, to like a real, like a 1-2-1 game. I don't know why I feel that way. There's really nothing on the ice that is suggesting that. I just have a sense that it's going to be real tight, nip tuck, and a low scoring game. So I would shade to the under tonight. But as you all know, Bob Bender's picks are like the kiss of death during the playoffs. They it's a guaranteed loss. So again, I'll keep throwing my opinion out there, win or lose. But remember, either follow or fade. If you had faded this postseason, you probably made money.
So I'm going to go 3-1 Dallas here. I think Tampa Bay top line might get shut down tonight. Just kind of a wacky game. I think Tampa will play well. They'll be right in it, but ultimately 3-1 Dallas, I like tonight.
All right, fellas, enough on the cup final. We'll do some quick news and notes, some things. We're getting ready for a free agency that's just going to be absolute chaos, a draft October 6th and 7th. Get your seatbelts on, ready to go. A couple things I wanted to tee up you guys on. Number one was the Jeff Petrie signing, which seems like on the surface a little bit too much money for Jeff Petrie, but I guess he adds a lot of value to that Canadiens team. And then Bobby Ryan being bought out. Bobby Ryan could be like Corey Perry or Joe Pavelski for a team next year that's going deep into the playoffs. But first, Jeff Petrie, I know you watch the Canadiens. You're big on the Canadiens, Robbie. So thoughts on Petrie signing, what was it, a four-year deal to stay in Montreal?
Good term for the Habs. And I'm the first guy that was critical of Mark Bergevin a couple of years ago. I wasn't sure the direction that the team was going in. I think he knows what he's doing. I think you got to give him credit. And this is a great deal, team-friendly for the Habs. Jeff Petrie's a guy that finished top 20 in points among defensemen last season. And he can do that year after year now. He's capable of that. So you're telling me that the Canadiens have two guys, Petrie and Shea Weber, that are going to finish, if they're healthy, top 20 in the league among defensemen. Look no further than the Dallas Stars this Stanley Cup playoffs. What has gotten them to this point? Two defensemen that can chip in points, Klingberg and Heiskanen. This is kind of a roundabout strategy to get more offense. But sometimes you got to start on the blue line to generate offense. Petrie's the guy to do that. Great puck-moving defenseman. He can play two ways. I know he was kind of criticized for not being as good defensively early in his career. That has all gone out the window. Very solid player. I like this a lot from Montreal. And I think just fantasy spin here, I think this is a player that you definitely want to target. Maybe rounds 8 through 11, depending on how deep your draft is.
You can't argue with that. When you look at the numbers that Petrie has consistently started to put up when he's been in Montreal the last handful of years, you know, 40 points this past season for the Habs. He scored 11 goals, 46 points, and that was in 71 games. 46 points in 82 games last year, 42 points in 82 games the year before that, 28 points in 80 games before that. So, you know, the other thing that you have to see is the pattern there of this guy doesn't get hurt. You know, he's on the ice every night skating big minutes. He averages, you know, 23, 24 minutes a game. You know, he really has become that heir apparent, I guess you could kind of say, to Shea Weber whenever, you know, they do decide to move on from Weber, you know, whenever that is. But I think Petrie's settled there. I think he's very happy there. And I think that they got a great value for a guy who, you know, easily, when you look at his numbers and when you look at the fact that Montreal's offense is getting better, he could score 50 points next season. He's just that good. And I think he's, like Rob said, developing the two-way game now where he is starting to control a lot of things in his own end and really take a step forward there as well. So I love the term, and I think that he's, you know, definitely going to be in that conversation of the top 25 or 30 defensemen fantasy-wise that you want to look at next year.
I'm looking forward to the Habs next year, really, especially with the way they played at the end of this year. You know, Claude Julien, you know, Nick Suzuki, all the young players. I mean, Drouin's got to get going at some point. But I'm looking forward to the Habs and what they do and you know, could do in the draft and you know, trades. I'm looking forward to free agency. Listen, I mentioned Bobby Ryan. There's not much to say about Bobby Ryan other than, to me, like I said earlier, you know, there'll be a contender, whether it's Colorado or, you know, throw the teams out there that add him and he'll make a difference. I mean, go take a look at Shattenkirk, who got bought out, and look at the difference he's making in Tampa. I mean, Corey Perry, Joe Pavelski, and Corey Perry was bought out also. Right, Robbie?
Exactly right. Look at a team like St. Louis. Look at a team, you know, one of those kind of maybe contenders that's going to be around for the next couple of years, regardless of what they do in the offseason. A team like that, let's just say hypothetically he went to St. Louis. On the power play with those top guns, he's going to score some goals. He's going to be fantasy relevant late in drafts. So, again, this is a player you don't want to sleep on. Last thing I want to say about Petrie real quick, in his interview with the media the next day, he noted that he wanted to sign there because of Kokkaniemi and Suzuki and what he saw from those two players specifically in the return-to-play format. I thought that kind of lit a fire under them, gave them a lot of confidence heading into next season. So I think this Habs team might be a little bit further along than a lot of people give them credit for. And then also another sleeper move that they made, James, was bringing in Jake Allen to back up Carey Price. I think that is a totally underrated move. And you saw it, I think, better than anyone, James. The goalie duo strategy, like Arizona, for example, the New York Islanders, for example, right? That really pays dividends in fantasy.
Oh, 100%. And just to piggyback onto Bobby Ryan for a quick second, I really do think that he can still be an effective middle six player on a team. You know, his contract hurt his value. You know, they were never going to be able to trade his contract. But I think now if a team can bring him in on, you know, kind of like one of those 1 or 2 year prove it deals for, you know, 1 or 2 million, especially one of these contending teams, and drop him onto like their second or third line, I still think he can be an effective player now that he's, you know, started to deal with the demons of his personal life. So, you know, I'm excited to see what Bobby Ryan can do, especially if you put him in a contending position. But yeah, the goaltender market this year is going to be very, very interesting to see. You know, you have the free agents, you know, like Holtby, like Jacob Markstrom. You have the potential that Marc-Andre Fleury could either be bought out or traded. You have one of the Pittsburgh goaltenders, either Jari or Murray, potentially being traded. So, you know, there's going to be a lot of movement on the goaltender free agency market and RFA market this season. And I'm looking forward to it because you're right. A guy like Jake Allen coming in, huge opportunity there for a powerful 1-2 with the way that Carey Price was playing in the return to play.
James Harding put on his David Satriano suit there and wanted to do a little goalie carousel, but we did that already with Davey Satriano. Clearly you didn't listen to the previous episodes, James, because
I did.
Okay.
I did.
Okay. All right. So you wanted to do a double goalie carousel. That's fine. Hey, one last thing I wanted to tee up on with you guys. Go ahead, Robbie. What do you got?
Okay. I got something big here. I want to throw this out, James. I think you and I texted about it last night. Torey Krug. Uh-huh. Okay. Trade rumors going on now today. Maybe they're going to move him for something. I know that you like him going to Detroit, James. Do you just want to give us a little brief synopsis as to why?
Well, I think when you look at Detroit and you think you see the fact that they just have so much cap space, and they do have a lot of guys that they have to get under contract. You know, Anthony Mantha is an RFA. Tyler Bertuzzi is an RFA. Brendan Perlini is an RFA. They're going to probably try and keep him. I like, though, now that Steve Yzerman is running things there, Detroit needs to start adding impact veterans to go along with these younger guys. I think, you know, the trade obviously for Mark Stahl the other day does help solidify their defense, but they need something else on the back end. And I think with the money that they have to spend, they're going to go out in free agency and they're going to go shopping. And I could see either a Torey Krug or a Pietrangelo end up there. And then on the back end, I could see, because they still need a goaltender, somebody like a Braden Holtby or a Markstrom. I think that they're going to be very active. I texted this to Pete last week, and I was talking about it with you. You know, I think that my bold prediction is they go out and they sign Pietrangelo and Holtby, and they just throw, you know, back up the Brinks truck, give these guys whatever they want, because I think players like that are going to expedite and finish that rebuild. You know, when you look at the young core that they have there, you know, Larkin, Mantha, Bertuzzi, Philippe Roenick, you know, those guys, they have a good, young, solid core that they're building there, and they just need some impact veterans now to take those guys to the next level. And we know from when he was running everything down in Tampa Bay, Yzerman is not afraid to swing for the fences. And I think that he's going to do the same thing there now.
Does that mean, so let's just say that plays out, James. If you like this take so much, you're texting Pete, you're texting me. Okay, we're texting everybody. But does that mean that Torey Krug, with the Detroit Red Wings, who aren't really flashy, they don't have a lot of high-profile guys, do you think that he's still the type of player that we saw him with Boston? Or do you think he kind of goes down a few pegs as it kind of happens if you sign with the Red Wings in the last couple of seasons?
You know, I think it hurts his fantasy value in the short term right now a little bit, but I wouldn't shy away from him. I think, you know, he's going to be the guy there. Obviously, it's going to be a drop-off going from guys skating with players like Marchand, Patrice Bergeron, David Pastrnak, to skating with, you know, Dylan Larkin and Anthony Mantha and Tyler Bertuzzi. But, you know, those guys are no slouches either. I think, though, you got to look at kind of the long-term aspect of everything. A guy like Krug, a guy like Petrangelo takes that team offensively and defensively to another level. And also some of the younger defensemen that they have on that team, you know, will help to take them to another level as well. You know, a guy like Madison Bowie, a guy like Philippe Roenick, like I said, you have to start adding some of those impact defensemen or impact veterans in general. And I think that you're going to see a team like Detroit, who finally feels like they're getting the younger players where they want. Now they need those guys who are going to come in and take them to the next level. And I can see a guy like Krug or Petrangelo, you know, Markstrom, Holtby, guys like that being the targets that they want to go for.
Don't have much else to say on this other than Stevie Y, I completely trust to make the right decision. I'm not exactly sure where his head is, if he's going to drop. Are they there? Are they at that point right now to drop the money on Krug, especially with all the uncertainty going on in the NHL? I'm not absolutely sure, but James, waiver wire James, is on it. That's what he believes, and so that's what we'll all listen to until it doesn't happen, Robbie.
Last ticket item on the program here. I did want to talk about Patrick Hornquist,
yeah,
Bob.
Yeah.
This is kind of an under-the-radar trade for me in fantasy. He was such a good fit with the Penguins, not only in fantasy for power play goals and hits, but also for kind of that leadership role, kind of helped them for sure win back-to-back cups. So I like this fit a lot for Florida, and I think the biggest thing that needs to be said here is that Florida has two other high-profile forward UFAs, potentially in Hoffman and Dadonov. If those guys elect to sign elsewhere, which it's everything you read in the press seems likely, that could be big news for Hornquist. Potential exposure to Barkov and Huberdeau. It's guaranteed on the power play for sure, but even in the top six at even strength.
So, Rob, I thought you said Patrick Laine. So we're going to talk about Patrick Laine after Patrick Hornquist, okay? Because the rumor swirling around Laine, I want to hear your thoughts on that. But, James, what are your thoughts on Hornquist? I mean, this guy is taking a beating. I mean, Rutherford, obviously, you know, is trying to mix it up. I think Hornquist will add some leadership. I mean, I'm saying the same things everyone else has said. Some grit to that Florida Panthers team. And the Penguins are ever-changing. I mean, they're trying to win as many cups as they can with Crosby and Malkin and these guys, Letang in their prime, or a little bit past their prime, I should say. So that's what Jimmy Rutherford's doing. He's spinning the wheel. I mean, he makes trades all the time. That's my perspective on that deal. So, James, give me some thoughts on that, and then we're going to bash it around a little bit on Laine.
Yeah, I would 100% agree with what Rob said. He kind of took the words out of my mouth, too. You know, you look at what they have that is potentially about to walk out of the building, and that's Mike Hoffman and Evgeny Dadonov, and you need a way to, you know, replace those guys. And I think Hornquist is a great fit there. I think also if both of them leave, you could see them give a potential shot next year to a guy like Owen Tippett, who is one of their highly touted prospects in the top six, you know. But you know, Hornquist adds a different dynamic to that. He adds a little bit more of a grit and a physicality in their top six, which we haven't seen them really have the last handful of seasons. You know, he's exactly the type of player that Joel Quenneville likes to have on his team. And I think that it's a great fit. Obviously, it was a little surprising that Pittsburgh traded him. You have to think that Pittsburgh has something else up their sleeve, but it is a perfect fit. And you kind of have to look at it as writing on the wall that potentially both Hoffman and Dadonov are both leaving, and now you bring in a guy who can play either right wing or left wing in the top six, who's probably going to slot into one of their spots at what would be, I would say, a cheaper cap hit than bringing either one of them back.
Yeah, you said the Penguins have something else up their sleeve. Has any GM traded the entire team away before the start of the next season? Because I could see Jimmy with the way he does things. I mean, the entire team, other than Crosby and maybe Malkin, and Malkin isn't untouchable. You know, I could see Jimmy just trading everyone. It'd be unprecedented. The entire team, except for Crosby, you know, moves along. I mean, that's how wild Jimmy Rutherford is. I mean, historically, I looked at like the last 5 years or how many trades Jimmy has made since he's been the GM of the Penguins. It's crazy. It's crazy what he does. Okay, Line A. I'm blown away that the Jets would even consider trading Line A, but I guess with all the salary scenarios and whatnot, to me, you can't trade a 50-goal scorer.
Bob, I'm watching a Sportsnet segment on this early this morning, and they're talking about Patrick Laine, you know, not being able to play two ways so well. Maybe he got a little bit better last season, but not where the Jets want him to be. Oh, they don't know if they want to play him with Scheifele. I'm thinking, hold on. We're talking about the Winnipeg Jets, who thought it was a good idea to get rid of four of their top six defensemen in the offseason last year. We're talking about the Winnipeg Jets, who year after year in the postseason can't seem to score goals, yet we're sitting here on a roundtable debating about whether they're going to trade Patrick Laine, who could be a 60-goal scorer with the right center in the NHL. I simply cannot believe this. I was floored when I heard that he's even being considered to be dealt. I mean, James, what on earth are you getting back for Patrick Laine that is somehow going to fix this Winnipeg Jets team who has a Vezina-winning goaltender with nothing else going on there?
Yeah, I mean, Bobby, to answer what you said a minute ago, if Wayne Gretzky can get traded, anybody can get traded. So, you know, that, you know, how can you trade a 50-goal scorer? How can you trade a 200-point scorer? You know, but, yeah, I mean, when you look at a guy like Patrick Laine, you know, those guys don't grow on trees. It's a very, very rare skill set that he has. But, you know, it might not just be a fit in Winnipeg the way that they thought it was going to be. It's going to take a lot, you know. There are a number of teams who are being rumored, and I think everybody should be kind of lining up and you know, lighting the phones on fire, just calling to see, you know, what it would take for a guy like Laine to get traded. I mean, you obviously have to start with either a high-end player off of your current roster and a high-end prospect and probably a first-round pick. And I don't even know if that would get it done. But we know the needs that Winnipeg has. They need defensemen. They need a second center, at least a second center. And they probably need an entire second line. You know, they have some needs, and there are only a few teams out there who could probably match whatever the asking price on a guy like Laine is. But they also know, I think, Winnipeg, that they're going to have to pay him next offseason because he only signed that 2-year bridge contract. And so they know that they're going to have to give him another big deal in the middle of this cap crunch right now. And I think that's really more what they're trying to prepare for, is they don't have to pay him next year. And they want to use those assets to spread it around somewhere else.
Okay, but let's just say this. I mean, Mark Scheifele is a world-class center. There's no debating that. Blake Wheeler is an all-star forward. Yep. But he's 34 years old. So you're looking at a potential paying someone in 2 years to score goals. Who are you paying? I mean, you have to pay Patrick Laine. You move the books around, make the money, find a way to get the money. This is the same franchise that traded away Timu Solani, and then he went on to be a career player for the Anaheim Ducks for like 20 seasons. Like, you don't do this. You simply do not even consider stuff like this. It sets a bad precedent for the organization. It sets a bad precedent for trying to bring in UFAs. Why would you want to sign in Winnipeg right now? Forget the weather, forget the taxes, all of that. Why on earth would you want to sign there thinking, oh my gosh, they're getting rid of their 50-goal scorer. I'm going to be relied on way too heavily there. I better produce, max out my deal, because if I falter at all, I'm going to hear from the media. I'm going to hear from everybody. I'm going to be blamed for the situation. It just does not work. You cannot. This is not posturing. I don't care what this is. Forget Laine had a little trouble, not last season, but the one before, maybe with some off-ice stuff. You have to forgive a young player. These guys are like 21, 22 years old. Come on. Like, give a guy a pass. Give him some confidence and give him a second-line center that he's able to play with. That should be their first goal, James, their first goal. When you get rid of all those defensemen, you got to bring in a second-line center that can play better than Brian Little.
I've been to Winnipeg. And let me tell you something, there's no other spot in North America that I'd rather be at. Okay, so if I'm a free agent, I am ready to go to Winnipeg. They got a lot of Little Caesars, a lot of franchises, a lot of Hooters out there. So that's how I feel about Winnipeg. Listen, this was my first reaction when I heard Laine trade rumors. if someone just unloads, you know, two first round picks, a big time prospect, and just dumps everything on your lap, you know, maybe that'd be the only scenario, you know, where you just get a bunch of these assets and a great player back. That's the only time I would do it. And I don't know enough about their salary cap situation, but when is Connor Hellebuck up? Because they're going to have to pay him. You know,
well, they just signed. They just signed him last year. He's got 4 years at like 6.1 left. You know, and their cap situation is actually pretty good. I mean, they have a ton of money. The only six players that they have signed for the 21-22 season right now are Wheeler, Connor, Ehlers, Scheifele, Morrissey, and Hellebuck. That's it. They have six players under contract for next offseason. So they have to fill everything. And I think that's where the scary thing for them is do they want to add another $6-7+ million contract and Patrick Laine to that when they have to literally sign the entire roster?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But 50 goals, though. Again, 50 goals, Robbie. It's not easy to do.
I'm not doubting his talent. I'm just saying that they have a lot of money that they have to spread around, and I think they have to, you know, say, do we really see this guy being a long-term fit here? Or then unload Wheeler.
Unload Wheeler, then. I mean, I know he's the captain, right? But say goodbye to Wheeler. I know
he's 34. 34 with an $8.25 million cap hit for the next 4 years.
Right. That's the issue here. That's what it is. You've committed your money in all these different places now. You've made your bed. But you can still fit Pat Laine under that cap crunch, especially because they got rid of so many guys. They got a lot of guys on expiring deals right now, too. Next season, they've got guys expiring. So – the only thing that I maybe am reading too far into this is Patrick Laine might have already hinted to them, I don't want to be here. I don't want to sign as a UFA here. I'm sure that's a few years away, but maybe he's not even interested in doing one of these bridge contracts again. Maybe this is maybe coming from his camp. I don't know. This is completely, I'm just trying to figure out why this would even be being talked about otherwise. And you're starting to see, James, I know you're seeing this with Matt Barzal too, a lot of RFAs, potential RFAs. It's seemingly the past few years, Mitch Marner comes to mind. Okay, these guys have a little bit more bargaining power than they used to. I don't know if this is because the social media influence, they can kind of leak out that either they're unhappy or they could get offers somewhere else. And then you're seeing offer sheets be a thing too. With the Habs, like trying to get Aho, for example. So I think this might be kind of like the future of RFAs in the NHL, where it's like, okay, at a younger age, these guys have a little bit more rights than they used to. They have a little bit more play. And maybe like if it's a Pat Laine, maybe not wanting to play there, you can kind of put that out now and force the team's hand a little bit sooner than they would have had to in seasons previous.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. I think the RFAs do have a little bit more of a bargaining power now. I mean, you know, compare it even just back to about 6-7 years ago when John Tavares signed a 5-year deal for $5 million. You know, a player like that now, you know, if he was an RFA now, putting up the numbers that he put up for the Islanders those first, you know, 5 years before he signed that deal, he'd be asking for 10 or 11 at the moment. So, you know, yeah, I mean, they have a little bit more power, but you brought up the offer sheets, and that's actually, I was going to bring that up to you to ask you the question, because what do you think is going to be the landscape with offer sheets right now with these teams that have the cap space? I think it's going to be very, very interesting, because I really do think now that you could see the offer sheet used, and you might be able to get some of these guys at a lower premium than what the market would be offering them on an offer sheet that their team still can't match because of the cap crunch. And so you might be able to get some of these guys long-term or longer term for better money than you would have actually initially done had the cap been going up, and their teams might have had the chance to, you know, to match something. Do you think, Rob, that we could see an uptick in offer sheets in the next 2 or 3 years because of the cap crunch, because some of these GMs know some of these other cap strap teams aren't going to be able to match even a smaller offer sheet than people originally thought a player would get?
Yes, James, I think for two reasons. One is it's especially important for teams that know they're not going to have a lottery pick the next 2 or 3 years. They can afford to give up 2 or 3 first rounders as long as they know they are a perennial contender. They believe in their core group of guys. The second reason I do believe, and I think it should happen more, is I think the NHL would love to have a little bit more commotion in the offseason than the kind of, you know, let's trade a guy like PK Subban who might be on the tail end of his career for something, a little bit more of a storyline generator, a little bit more of an excitement in the air, so to speak, that kind of keeps people engaged, keeps people more active. I think we saw it a little bit with Aho. I mean, the buzz that thing generated, James, even though it was flat on arrival, like that, let's call it a bad offer for what it was. It was so fun, Bob. I remember just to talk about that, breaking it all down, right? And I think the media in general, it just brought a lot of eyes to the game thinking, ooh, this is kind of cool, and we'd all like to see more of this.
Now, you're right about that. Before we wrap it up, James, real quick, Islanders, free agency, trades. How do you feel about Taylor Hall in an Islanders uniform? You think Lou Lamoriello, who's the game breaker that Lou Lamoriello is going to add to this team? They're on the cusp. Who is it? Who do you want them to sign? They went after Panarin. They couldn't get it done because the crosstown rival swooped in and did what they had to do. Who do you want in an Islanders uniform? Because if you're a free agent, you don't mind going to Long Island and playing. New building, great chemistry. Good coach on the cusp of something great, potentially. James, big Islanders fan. Who do you want in uniform? And then we'll wrap.
You know, I mean, the guy that I want is the guy that we just talked about, and that's Patrick Laine. I want Lou Lamoriello to go out and figure, you know, give them whatever they need to, you know, to give them. I, you know, give them Ryan Pulak, give them Oliver Wallstrom, give them 2 first-round picks. You know, I would give them. You know, the Islanders have an embarrassment of riches on the back end. They have 9 defensemen under contract for next season, so they have the ability to deal from a position of strength right now. The only one I probably wouldn't give up at the moment is a guy like Noah Dobson, who's 19 years old and already looks like he's going to be a top 2 defenseman on any team that he plays for. But, you know, I want Patrick Laine, but if that's not going to happen, you know, you need to get these guys a score. They're a sniper away from really being a true contender. And I just don't know if Hall, who has only scored 30 goals once in his career, is the guy to do that. If I'm going out and I'm not trying to pay Taylor Hall a lot of money, I'd be looking at a guy like Mike Hoffman. I think he would be a perfect complement in that top 6 to, you know, a guy like Matt Barzal. You have to give Barzal the scoring winger that you never gave John Tavares when he was here. And, you know, you have to go out. There's only a few of those guys who I think you're going to be able to get. If you do go out and get Hall, I'm fine with that, but I still think he's more of a playmaker than a scorer. I'm looking at a guy like Hoffman. I'd be looking at a trade for a guy like Laine, maybe a guy like Dadonov. He did score 25 goals this year. But you need to give these guys a scorer in the top 6.
All right. I don't know how Laine would do in the New York market. It would be fun, though.
You know, I mean, you got to think, though, he's kind of a younger version, a younger, more raw version of Alex Ovechkin. And you saw what Trotz did when he finally got his claws into Ovechkin. I think that he could really, you know, let Laine just loose as the scorer that he is and really take him to the next level as a 2-way player. But, you know, it's going to be interesting to see if they do end up trading him this offseason.
I think the much more viable route is certainly getting Barzal to that team-friendly deal. Lock him up. Don't worry about that anymore. And then, James, exactly what you said, bring in a Hoffman, maybe even a Dadonov, someone that maybe a little bit more of a $5 million forward than these top guys, and just try and be more practical about it. But great chatting with you guys today. Good stuff on the UFAs. Good stuff on the trades. We'll have Game 6 tonight, which we're all excited for, and hopefully we'll be talking about Game 7 Wednesday morning. But if not, Tampa Bay Lightning, it's their season. So,
James, thanks for popping on, buddy.
Always a pleasure, guys. Appreciate you having me, and hopefully we'll do it again soon.
And for the listeners, rate and review. We appreciate you sticking with us. Now it's October and we're talking about Stanley Cup Game 6. We always appreciate it. Rate and review. And to Papa Petey, we look forward to your return, whenever that may be. Thanks for listening. We will talk to you